Hello, welcome to the Lean on Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello and welcome to the Lean on Plants podcast. I'm super stoked that you're here. Thank you for putting me in your ear right now, whether you're out on a run or you're in your car. Let's get into this episode. We're going to be talking about five health and wellness myths that need to die. They've been around for a while, and there are things that are either wildly blown out of proportion in terms of how important they are to you losing weight, or they're things that are just really, really misunderstood. And I think it's pretty important to understand what the big rocks are in terms of whether you're going to lose weight or not. Big rocks analogy being where if you want to fill a jar fully up, then you've got to put those big rocks in first before you put the sand and the silt and the little tiny rocks so that you actually fit those big rocks in. These are the things that are going to have the most impact on you getting into a calorie deficit and consistently losing weight and then being able to maintain that. And these things are not the big rocks. So it's pretty important to know that. I think that for most people, they end up being a distraction. And I think one of the biggest issues when it comes to behavioral change is focusing on too many things that don't matter much. So let's get some clarity on these five things and dive into the episode. The first thing we're going to talk about is protein. Protein has been a hot topic for an extremely long period of time. Like, we're talking hundreds of years here. But what's happened in the fitness industry is we see people who take protein supplements. I would say protein is one of the most popular and most common supplements in the fitness industry. And we want to look like the people who promote those things, so we think that we need it. You also see a lot of fitness influencers or people who are in that weight loss space talking about how protein is really important to focus on when you are in a calorie deficit and when you are trying to lose weight. And people tend to come at this from two distinct angles. Number one, am I getting enough protein full stop on a plant-based diet? Especially when you see someone like myself who creates a weight loss plate and there's things like potatoes and broccoli and maybe some chickpeas or some edamame on there. And doesn't appear to be any protein source as such. There's no lean meat. There's no tofu. But there is protein in that meal. So that's one of the questions is, can I just get enough for my requirements? And then because there's this real push to be having more protein as you're losing weight, which we'll talk about why, then there's also that concern that you might not be getting enough protein while you're trying to lose weight and that would stop you losing weight if you weren't getting enough. So those are the two kind of positions. Am I getting enough full stop? Am I getting enough for weight loss? So interestingly, even though there's all this push towards eating more protein, 97% of Americans get the recommended amount, and that recommended protein requirement, which is, there's a nearly global consensus for, by the way, is about 0.8 to 0.9 grams per kilo of healthy body weight. So that's you at your ideal lean body weight. It's not what you weigh now. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you don't need way more protein than someone else. So for me, I sit around 50 kilos. So that means that I need about 45 to 55 grams of protein per day. And that's not a sales target that you're trying to beat. That's not a personal best that you need to go way beyond. That's a recommended range. But that's way off what a lot of fitness influencers are trying to hit, which is 100 or sometimes even 200 grams of protein per day. So why do so many people worry about protein targets or try to hit higher than these recommended protein amounts? Because if you come back to that first question, am I getting enough protein on a plant-based diet? You can very, very easily get 45 to 55 grams per day or even 60 grams per day without needing to have tons of tofu. I do that by having a ton of vegetables, by eating enough calories in general, and then I do have legumes in there to make sure that I am getting that as well. Like I'm eating edamame most days, I'm eating beans at least one meal per day, and I'm eating things like some little bits of nuts and seeds, and my whole diet is making up the fact that I can get to those targets. But there's no reason why I personally would see that I would need to go way, way more than that. It's very easy to hit that just doing what I'm doing. So why do we have this idea that we need to eat so much more? And I think to understand this, like, and let me just be totally honest with this as well, is that you can talk to someone else who is also a vegan, who is also in the weight loss world, and they will most likely tell you that you need to have protein. There are so many varied opinions on this. But one thing that I want to point out is that you need to, in some ways, take everything that someone who sells protein supplements, everything that they say with a grain of salt, because supplementation sales are a huge part of the fitness industry's revenue. And I didn't understand this at the level that I did when I first even did my, I did a podcast episode all about protein, which I'm going to link in the description if you want to go deep into that. But since doing that episode, I've learned that even more, because protein supplements have an extremely high profit margin. You can, even with the people who are getting affiliate links from different protein companies, they can really take home 40 to 50% of that in pure profit from selling protein supplements that don't actually cost a lot to make. If you were to go to your local, I was going to say bin in, but I don't even know if people know what that is. Basically somewhere where you have to get the food out of bins yourself and then put it into bags. We have one called the bin in here. And you can go there and buy pure pea protein, and it's got no additives, and there's nothing in there to make it look sexy, and you put it in a little plastic bag. And it's incredibly cheap. Like if you want to get a protein supplement, you can get literal ground up legumes and peas, split peas or whatever it's made from, and have that. But that doesn't have that hugely high profit margin. And so if it's as an amazing supplementation to someone's income or someone's revenue in their business, or if they're an influencer, if they can get someone onto their protein brand, then they can extract a whole lot more revenue from that person, and they can do that on an ongoing basis. And I'm not saying that this is wrong. Here's the thing. I'm not saying that this is necessarily negative, and I don't know everything. Like there might be some reason that some person would need to have more than that recommended that global consensus recommended, after lots of deliberation that it's come to that recommended amount, then maybe there is some reason that someone would need double, triple, four times that. But if that person that's telling you that is selling you their product because of that, and that they can, it's pure profit for them, just take that with a grain of salt is all I'm saying, okay? So to understand some of the hype around protein, we've got to look at the history of it. So in the 1800s, the recommended protein requirements were actually double what they are now. And in the 50s, protein was this real fashion nutrient. Because the recommended requirements were so much higher than they are now, there was what was known as a protein gap that needed filling, particularly in the third world. And there was a disease of malnutrition that was called, I'm going to get this wrong, kwashiorkor. Kwashiorkor? I'm not exactly sure how to say it. I should have looked it up. But that was assumed to be caused by protein deficiency. And the crazy thing is that the woman who discovered it spent the last 20 years of her life debunking protein deficiency as the cause of the disease. So there's no real evidence for a dietary protein deficiency, but of course malnutrition is real, very real. And maybe you've heard people say, well, unless you're not getting enough calories, then you can't get protein deficient. I personally wouldn't go that far. I think those targets exist for a reason. And if you're living off white rice, there's going to be a lot of things that you're not getting enough of, and protein's going to be one of those. But like I said, it's very easy to do that on a varied whole foods plant-based diet that is low in calorie density. So still trying to answer this question, why do we need so much more protein than the recommended amount when losing weight? So probably the main reason that people will say you need more protein is that you do have some muscle loss that occurs when you get into a calorie deficit. And if you're on a weight loss journey, then you need to be in a calorie deficit to lose weight. Like, that's a weight loss journey. That's how weight loss works. You must be consuming less calories than you burn so that your body dips into your stored fat cells and then burns that as fuel. It's rainy day fund. It's when there's a zombie apocalypse and it's taking from those stores. So it not only takes from your fat stores, you also do take some from your protein stores, aka your muscles. So if you want to reduce some of that muscle depletion while you're losing weight, then you'd think, okay, well, maybe I'll just eat a little bit more protein. But as Michael Greger would say, who is my absolute hero, like he is such a gem. And if you want to listen to the podcast episode that I did with him, then I'll put that in the description as well. And if you don't know who Michael Greger is, then you've literally been living under a rock. He is like the, I don't even know how to say, like the god of plant-based nutrition. Anyway, he has a phrase which says that you don't know unless you put it to the test, which is, if you've got a theory that eating more protein is going to help you preserve more muscle mass while you're in a calorie deficit, you got to test it out. So there have been quite a few studies that look at whether a higher protein diet or a lower protein diet helps to increase muscle mass while losing weight. And it's pretty split, like, to be honest. There's some that don't support that there's really any benefit. And there's some that show that there is a benefit of having more protein while you're losing weight in terms of preserving muscle mass. But when you put them all together, this only seems to be a very small advantage in terms of preserving that muscle mass with having way more protein than what is recommended. And there are other ways of preserving that while you are trying to lose weight. The best one being resistance training. So even lifting 3 times a week can prevent more than 90% of lean body mass loss. And one of the most underrated things to do is simply walk. You want to stop losing muscle as you age, then walk. And there's a lot more that I could go into about protein, with this idea that protein is more filling than carbohydrates or other macronutrients. But when this has been put to the test, it doesn't appear to actually reduce the amount of calories that people eat at subsequent meals. So it's like saying, hey, it was more filling for me to eat this donut that was pink than this donut that was orange, but you still eat the same amount of donut. All right, it only really matters in terms of satiation if that actually translates to you eating less throughout the rest of your day, which, crazily enough, legumes do that. Leafy greens do that. They are natural hunger suppressants. And when you eat beans, which have a ton of fiber, you can actually cut hundreds of calories in terms of from your appetite 11 hours later, which is pretty phenomenal. So rather than needing to eat a high protein meal to feel more full, think about how can I eat a high fiber meal or a meal that is full of things like beans, because that's going to be something that actually reduces your overall calorie consumption because it keeps you fuller for longer. Protein also has the highest thermic effect of food, which is true. Like, this is a great thing, right? You burn more calories actually digesting and metabolizing protein as a macronutrient than you would from carbs or fat. But here's the thing to understand about this is that is still only a tiny percentage of a tiny percentage in terms of your total calorie burn, your total energy expenditure. The amount of calories that you burn digesting and metabolizing your food is only about 10% of your total calories. So then you think about having a little bit more protein in your diet or even a lot more protein, you're looking at a percentage of 10%. It's not really enough to say that it makes a huge difference. And if you're trying to eat more high calorie, high protein foods like meat replacements or any protein shakes or anything that is an isolated protein source, that will tend to be higher in calories. So you will be eating more calories because you're eating those kinds of foods. So it's not enough to just say that you burn more calories because you eat more protein. You might be eating more calories because you're eating or trying to eat more protein supplements or protein replacement type foods. At the end of the day, we are riding a very hyped up protein wave that has been building momentum since the 1800s. We're riding on the back of more than a century of misinformation about the role of protein and how much we need. No matter who you talk to, you can come away with polar opposite opinions that are both backed by some kind of science or some kind of research, which makes it really complicated to actually come to some kind of consensus or opinion. My view is this has been hyped up by both sides and both groups of people. The ones that say that you need to have so much more protein than is recommended, and the ones that say that it's going to kill you if you have more than is required. And my opinion on this is very moderate. We do need to get enough protein. It's not hard to do that, but we do need to get enough in our diets. And I think that we should be conscious of designing a meal system or some kind of eating system that does include the foods that are going to give us enough of all macro and micronutrients, not just protein. So while I do think we need to be conscious of it, I think you'd have to have an extremely good reason, backed by a lot of research, to say that there was any need to be having so much more than that recommended amount. And I have no reason to trust a fitness influencer who sells protein powder telling me that I need 150 grams a day when the global consensus says that I need about 50. So focus on getting enough legumes and enough fiber and enough variety in your diet. And I don't think you need to worry about protein. Just walk most days and try to strength train. And there's so many benefits of doing that anyway. Moving on to myth number two. And this is that it's much, much harder to lose weight as you age. So, full disclaimer, I am in my 30s. I have not experienced menopause yet. But there's a lot of factors that go into this, and what I've observed is that a lot of people think that they can't lose weight because of some kind of factor outside of their control, and that menopause or aging is making their calorie burn or hormones so much lower than it previously was, and now doing exactly the same thing, they are gaining weight. This can feel incredibly frustrating. If you feel this way, I empathize with you. I would hate to feel like that. That's absolutely awful. And I've definitely felt stuck and frustrated at many points throughout my time of trying to lose weight. To understand this, though, we've got to dive into how many calories does someone burn in a day and how much does that change over our lifetimes. So as a starting average, women burn around 2,400 calories per day, which is much higher than I thought it was. This is people of all ages and all sizes. And it actually ranges from about 1,300 calories per day to above 3,600 calories per day as a range. And this was in a study that looked at 381 women. So there's obviously huge variation on that. And just a quick math lesson in case we've forgotten. All an average is you take all of those numbers, all of those different calorie burns for women between 1,300 and 3,600, you add them all up and then you divide them by the number of people, and then that's going to give you a number which comes out at 2,400 calories per day, like I said. So the amount of calories that you need to maintain your weight depends on three main things. Number one, this is more important than age, is your current size. Think of this like a big truck versus a tiny little granny car. A big truck needs a lot more fuel to power it, and a small car doesn't need much, so you need more calories to maintain a bigger body mass than a smaller, leaner body, or a shorter body as well. So that's why everyone hits a plateau at some point with dieting, because as we get smaller, the amount of calories that was a deficit for us at one point is no longer a deficit because we now have less fuel needs than we did when we started dieting. The second factor is age. So the older you are, the less calories you need on average. But please don't let this freak you out, because it's not actually massive amounts of difference, and you can still lose weight as you get older. The third one is your activity levels. And this is one of the things that has the most impact on the calorie variation between people. It could be any form of exercise, but it's mostly to do with non-exercise activity like walking around, fidgeting, mowing the lawns, and that can vary by hundreds of calories between individuals. So the average calorie needs for women drop from about 2,700 calories on average at age 20 down to about 2,000 calories at 70. But again, we haven't addressed why this happens. Is it hormones? Is it movement? Is it being more sedentary? What is it? What is the reason that we're actually losing some of those calories? And before we get into what some of those reasons are, I think it's really important to understand that there is a normal range of distribution in terms of how many calories you need. And what that means is that we're all operating on this bell curve where most people, the amount of calories that they need is somewhere along the middle. And then as those calorie needs get slightly higher or slightly lower, there are less and less people towards the edges that are at those extremes. Because no one, no matter how tall they are, no matter how much they run, is going to be needing 20,000 calories a day. All right? There's a normal range. In the same way, there wasn't anyone in the study that needed less than 1,300 calories per day. And the amount of people that needed that, there was no one, right? But the amount of people that needed between 1,200 and 1,600 calories was only 3%. And I would argue that they were either very small and very short, or had very, very low movement levels. So most people are operating, even though 2,400 calories, it might be much more than what you need, you're still probably needing a lot more than what you think you need. You're still operating in a normal range. So this study was really interesting, and it plotted all these different calorie expenditures for people, and then it looked at like what are some of the commonalities for them. So tall people tend to burn more calories and need more energy than shorter people. So they can afford to eat a little bit more while maintaining their weight. They've got more to play with. So in this study, virtually all the women who had a calorie burn less than 2,000 were shorter than 5'7". And that doesn't mean that if you're shorter, you will have a lower calorie burn, but it meant that the average calorie burn for women, even at 4'9", was still 2,000 calories. So it just means that if your calorie burn is lower than someone else, then height could be a factor. And we know that we actually start to shrink as we age. Heavy people also burn more calories. So heavier people generally have higher metabolic rates. And that just is reflected in the fact that we need more calories to move a larger body. It requires more energy. It also requires more energy to fuel muscle. And most of us are losing muscle as we age. Like, we can see this really, really clearly. So if we come back to that protein idea, if you have a habit of walking, if you are resistance training, you can offset some of that muscle loss, which means that you are keeping some of that higher calorie burn that you have naturally as you are younger while you are actually aging. So active people burn more calories as well. And this is why it's really hard to actually predict calorie needs and look at some kind of calculator, because they can't really accurately predict your movement. But activity level is a stronger explainer of average calorie burn more than age, more than height, or more than weight. And that explains 40 to 50% of the variation. So that means that if you see someone who is just naturally seems like they can eat a ton more than you, they probably fidget more. They probably move more. 40 to 50%, that is far more than just losing a bit of muscle mass. And this is one of the key reasons that we do tend to start to gain weight as we age, is that we move less. We've got less muscle mass. And then we're also compounding some of that issue by moving less as we age. And then we are needing less calories. So we're trending that down from, we're losing 700 calories on average from between 20 to 70. What I'm trying to get at here is that there's so many reasons as to why something occurs. And a lot of them are somewhat, if not mostly, within our influence. And one of the most common questions that I get asked is, why is it so much harder for me now that I've hit menopause, or my hormones are making it harder? And those questions or those comments are very difficult to address because they are not specific and very hard to actually pin down. For example, if someone just says, you know, my hormones are making it harder. What hormones exactly? How is that influencing your body? Is that influencing your hunger, meaning that you are eating more calories than you did? Is that influencing your energy levels, meaning that you are not moving as much, and therefore it's actually the movement that is making you need less calories and therefore gain weight eating the same amount as you did before? It's very hard to isolate causation for things, but what we can observe is that these three things that I've talked about, how big you are, how heavy you are, how active you are, have the most influence on your calorie burn. And you can influence a lot of those things, especially your activity levels. And while you do need less calories as you age, that is a downward trend that you can influence by increasing your movement and doing other things as well, that is not hugely blown out of proportion. Like we said, 700 calories from age 20 to age 70. It's not like you suddenly hit a number and now you need 1,000 less calories than you ever did before. I don't think we take enough credit, or we take into account how different stages of life and different things that we're going through affect our behavior, and then our weight is affected in the same way. It's a really common phenomenon that when people get married, they gain weight. This doesn't mean that your hormones suddenly change because you're living with someone that you love. It means that as we become more comfortable and we feel more settled, we tend to eat more. So our behavior is what is affected by that. And I would bet that there are so many behavioral changes and little things that change in these different stages of our life, which is then reflected in weight gain. Just like when you move to a new city or you get a new job, there is normally some kind of weight shift that is associated with those activities. All I'm trying to say here is that we have more influence over this than we don't. And it's far better to focus on the things that we can control rather than the things that are very hard to find concrete answers to or concrete causation that really you have little to no influence over anyway. If you want the best bet, if you want to give yourself the best fighting chance in terms of increasing your calorie burn or maintaining that as you age, then move more. The best thing that you can do for your hormones is to eat a whole foods plant-based diet. If you want to preserve muscle mass as you age, then start going to the gym and doing some resistance training. And if you want to mitigate some of the behavioral change that happens at different stages of life or different circumstances, then learn about behavioral change and how you can influence that and create strong habits that aren't bottlenecked by whatever is going on in your life. And that's what we all have to do. All of this to say that yes, we do need less calories as we age. So it does get harder, but you have more control than you realize, and it doesn't make it way impossible. You just might need to make some tweaks. The third myth, and this one really needs to die, is that carbohydrates make you fat. Things like potatoes, rice, beans, veggies. I don't think people think you get fat off veggies, but I know that people are scared to eat potatoes. So where the heck does this myth come from? Well, I'm speculating here, but I think the main reason is that most of the general population has been sold a load of hogwash as to why weight loss happens and the fundamentals. Most of us are confused. I was confused as, I would say, a reasonably smart, educated person for more than a decade about how weight loss actually worked. I did not understand it. And so when we don't realize or understand that the only way to lose weight is in a calorie deficit, and if we are in one, we will burn fat 100% of the time, because that's how the law of thermodynamics works, that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It has to go somewhere. So if you don't get enough of it, you have to pull that energy from somewhere, your stored fat cells. But at different points throughout history, we've been able to observe the rise in different types of food products and kind of see trends of what people are eating, and then look at population data and say, well, are people gaining weight eating more carbohydrates or more fatty foods, or what is it? Like, why are people gaining weight? So people have been trying to figure this out for a long time, right? So if you can look at population data and you can say, okay, people are eating far more sugar and sugary cereals and breads and all of these things and pasta than they ever have before, and they're gaining weight, well, it will be logical to assume or conclude that that's the carbohydrates, right? Well, no, because you're better than that. You understand that fundamentally this is a calorie problem. So most of the reason that carbohydrates get a bad rep is that a lot of carbohydrates are really high in calorie density, and they have contributed to our rising population obesity prevalence. And it's true, because things like fizzy drinks and foods that are really, really high in sugar, sugary cereals, they mean that our average calorie consumption has increased by hundreds of calories since the 70s. But that's not the whole picture, right? Because there's other macronutrients that have increased as well. Like, we've also got way more fat in our diet. The thing is, it's not about what you eat so much as whether you are eating a lower calorie dense diet or a higher calorie dense diet. And what we can conclude is that the reason that we are heavier on average as a society is because we simply have more calories produced per person, and we're eating a higher calorie diet than we ever have before. It's not because of the carbohydrates. Proponents of a low-carb diet often talk about insulin as the reason that you should steer clear of carbohydrates. But the main problem with insulin resistance is where you are not able to get rid of blood sugar, which is something that's normal that happens after you eat. And so you actually increase your need for insulin because you're not getting rid of that blood sugar. And that in turn increases your insulin resistance. That's the main problem. And part of the reason that your body might struggle to get rid of blood sugar is because you are eating a refined source of carbohydrates where you've got a huge flood of blood sugar really quickly. You think about fizzy drinks, things like cakes and sugary cereals, all of that kind of thing. But the other thing is that when you have a high fat diet or you have a lot of fat in your muscles, then it's really hard for your body to actually get rid of that blood sugar quickly and effectively, and then you need more insulin pumped in to help break through that resistance barrier to getting rid of that blood sugar. So if you increase your insulin sensitivity, which you can do with a whole foods plant-based diet that's actually high in whole food carbohydrates, which are released a lot slower over your entire intestine, rather than having all of that blood sugar released really quickly when it enters your stomach, then you can actually have less need for insulin and increase your insulin sensitivity. And this is why a lot of people who are in the Mastering Diabetes program, and I did a podcast episode with Robbie from the Mastering Diabetes duo, which is Robbie and Cyrus, and I will link that in the description. That's why they've had thousands and thousands of people in their program who have actually either reversed or at least manage their type 2 diabetes and not needed any more insulin, or they've been able to manage their type 1 diabetes by needing much, much less and increasing their carbohydrate to insulin ratio, which is the goal when it comes to type 1 diabetes, through a whole food, low fat, plant based diet that is really, really high in carbohydrates. So there's a lot more to this than just don't eat carbs if you don't want to spike your blood sugar, because it is what you're eating and also how your body is actually getting rid of that. If in doubt, whole food plant-based diet is what works. And to be honest, the whole food plant-based carbohydrates are some of the lowest calorie dense foods on the planet. Fruits, potatoes, rice, and beans, they're all phenomenal for weight loss for that reason. And most of them are actually really helpful in the fact that they are released slowly into, rather than quickly in your body, which is flipping amazing. And just for perspective, because I know a lot of people are scared of potatoes, 1 pound of potatoes is about 400 calories. 1 pound of bread is about 1400 calories. So you've got more than three times the amount of bread, or calories I should say, for the same amount of food. If you compare that to something like nuts, which yes are healthy for you and you should be eating, but in small quantities, nuts are about 2,800 calories per pound. No one is gaining weight from potatoes. They're gaining weight from what they're putting on potatoes. Myth number four is that fat makes you fat. And I think this one's a lot more prevalent in kind of the circles that I'm in, or I hear a lot of people that are really, really scared to eat any kind of overt fats, especially during a weight loss phase. And people will say to me, oh, well, you just are eating avocado or nuts and seeds now because you've lost the weight. And it's like, no, I didn't lose the weight because I cut out fat. I lost the weight because I got into a calorie deficit. That's how it works. And you can do that with fat in your diet. And there's good reasons to do that. So fat does not mean that you are inherently going to gain weight just because you add that in your diet. And to really understand this, then you have to understand a few fundamentals of how macronutrients are stored in your body. So carbohydrates are used for quick energy stores. So when you eat them, your blood is full of blood sugar, and that gets stored as glycogen in your muscles and liver. And this is why insulin sensitivity is so important, because you need to get rid of that blood sugar, right? You need to uptake it into your muscles and your liver. So to convert glycogen into fat is actually quite a costly process from a calorie perspective. From a fuel perspective, there's a lot of waste in that process. And so when your body converts excess carbohydrates or excess glycogen into stored fat because you've eaten more calories than you need, you're going to lose about 23% of those calories in that process of converting carbohydrates into fat. Whereas when you eat fat directly, because it's already fat, that gets stored in a very efficient way. I think you're only losing like 3% of the calories in that process of actually eating fat and then storing fat. And I think this is the main place that people get really scared of fat and where this comes from. And this kind of whole idea that when you eat fat, like that fat will directly come into your body. And in some ways that's very true, but you still lose weight in a calorie deficit. You're still burning fat and burning carbohydrates and burning fuel all the time. That's a process that your body is continually doing. So when you're in a calorie deficit, you're burning more of everything and you're burning more of those stored fat cells because you're depleting your glycogen stores. But the fascinating thing here is that carbohydrates and having most of your calories come from carbohydrates is far, far better for fat loss, that you can actually lose more weight on the same amount of calories, even double. Like that's the insane thing. You lose so much more weight just by eating a high carbohydrate diet versus a high fat diet. And part of that is from that process. It's easier to store excess fat as fat, and it's much harder to gain weight from excess carbohydrates. But this doesn't mean that you can't lose weight on a fat-based diet. And that's very evidenced by the fact that people lose weight on a keto diet or a paleo diet or a carnivore diet. A lot of people are losing weight on those diets. They could just do that more effectively with less hunger and less heart disease risk if they were doing it with a whole foods, high carbohydrate-based diet. But here's the main reason why a lot of people are scared of having fat in their diet and where this idea of fat makes you fat comes from. Fat as a macronutrient is 3 times the calories of carbohydrates or protein. So for every gram of carbohydrates, you've got about 4 calories. Same with protein. But fat is 9 calories. So fat is like this little calorie powerhouse. So the more fat you have in your diet, the more calories you have in your diet because it's more calorie dense. 1 pound of oil has about 4,000 calories. So for perspective, that means that you've got more calories in 1 tablespoon of oil than you do in an entire head of broccoli. So which do you think is going to fill you up more and help you lose weight? Obviously the broccoli, not that 1 tablespoon of oil. And saturated fats do actually appear to cause more weight gain than unsaturated fats. Think animal products. So does stress. Excess calories cause weight gain. And a lot of fat in your diet normally leads to a lot more excess calories. It's also more costly for you to convert carbohydrates or excess carbohydrates into fat, but it's very easy for your body to store fat as fat. So carbohydrates and a carbohydrates-based diet wins hands down when it comes to weight loss. A high-carb diet beats a keto diet every single time. But there is no reason that you can't have small amounts from a calorie density perspective of overt fats like avocado, nuts, and seeds in your diet and still lose weight because it all comes down to being in a calorie deficit. And you can completely plateau on an overt fats-free diet, meaning you don't lose any weight, and you can lose weight very effectively having some fat in your diet. It's all about whether you get into a calorie deficit or not. So this is about how fat and carbohydrates and behavior and insulin and age and height and weight and all those things actually influence what's happening on your body, but neither one of them, or not just one of them on its own, is ever going to be the sole reason why something works or doesn't work, because your body's just far more complex than that. So focus on lowering the overall calorie density of your meal, keeping your overt fats to a minimum to reduce your overall calories, and that's going to help you get into a deficit very effectively, and you won't be storing as much fat, which means that you will be losing weight quicker as well. So the fifth and final myth that needs to die. This is probably the one that I'm most passionate about, and it's the thing that we talk most about on this podcast, is that willpower is the most important factor for weight loss. And it's gotten so bad to the point where there is so much weight stigma and there is so much misunderstanding about what contributes to weight gain, where people who are overweight are seen as having less willpower, they are seen as not being as smart, they are treated differently, and people, I'm amazed and shocked at how many times when I have a little post that goes viral and I start to see, well, there's lots of people commenting that don't normally comment, they're not in my realm, they're not in my world, and they mostly just say eat less. Just eat less, or just stop being lazy, or just stop, just, you could have done this just by not eating as much. And willpower is so not a factor when it comes to weight loss. So from a purely physiological level, we are designed to be big eaters. And there's this quote from Michael Greger, which I wish I could remember. It's something like, we need to feel full from tip to tail, or something like that. And it's just a commentary on, we're meant to feel full. We're designed to eat so that we can eat a lot of food, and that keeps us full for a long period of time. And people that could eat more were more likely to survive. And when your body actually notices or detects undigested calories in your lower intestine, it's a hunger suppressant, right? You are designed to have undigested calories in your lower intestine. That's a lot of length of being full. That's like a football field, or however much it is. I don't actually know. Don't quote me on that. I don't think it's a football field for your intestinal length. It's pretty long though. So we are meant to be full. We are meant to eat a large amount of food, and we can do that very easily by using calorie density while still halving the calories that we eat. And most people don't know this because, bloomin', people haven't told them, and we've been sold this lie that we need supplements and shake replacements and we need to cut out a meal and we just need to eat less, and if we only knew our calorie number, then we would be able to stick to it, which is complete bollocks anyway, because I've known what to do for a long time and still didn't do it with many different things. And I'm sure you're the same. Knowing what to do and actually following through are two very, very different things. So the first and most important part of this is to eliminate so much need for willpower by simply eating enough food and enough of the right kinds of foods so that you are full and satisfied, so that you are not a slave to hunger. Because hunger is a master you were never designed to resist. Hunger is a mechanism designed to keep you alive, to stop you starving. So when we constantly try and fight it, we're fighting our natural biology and something that is inherently good. So instead, we need to work with those urges and we need to eat the right kinds of food. The most satiating food, which means that you feel full and satisfied and that lasts for a long time, are potatoes. Potatoes are number one. And then things like legumes, so chickpeas, banzo beans, I think they're called, black beans, lentils, edamame, anything in that pulse family, those are foods that are super, super high in fiber, and they also help you feel full for the long haul. I'm talking 11 hours later, like we just talked about, when they reach your lower intestine. Eating enough volume, and you can offset the calories in your meals by adding a ton of vegetables. This is why the 50-50 plate is such an amazing concept when it comes to weight loss. Another one that we use in Lean of Plants is just having a goal of how much vegetables you're going to eat per day. So if you're starting out, simply having a goal where you fill your container of food with a pound of vegetables every day, or you do that every night. Let's say you've got some cherry tomatoes and some carrots and some snap peas in there. I'm just talking about all the things we can't get here because it's winter and I wish that we could. And that container's full, and then throughout the day you're just trying to eat that 1 pound. Simply by doing that, because we tend to eat the same amount of food all the time, then you're going to be eating less calories from other high calorie dense foods. So that's a very, very simple tool just to increase your veggies, which means that your overall calories, the calories per bite, the calories per meal go down. Secondly, we need to use behavioral change if we want to change ingrained habits. And willpower is not part of this. We know so much more about why people do what they do and how habits work than we ever have before. There is really no excuse that we should be relying on willpower or thinking that willpower is something that we need more of when that has never worked in the past. Proven behavioral change tools are things like using your environment to shape behavior, understanding triggers and then minimizing them, putting obstacles between yourself and those bad habits that you're trying to cut, making it easier and more obvious and more satisfying for you to follow through on those good behaviors that you're trying to develop, making those negative triggers invisible, making it super satisfying for you to keep piling on more and more good habits, minimizing the effects of failure and being able to deal with that well and use failure as a learning tool instead of something that sends you into an all-in, all-out cycle. And if you want to know more about what these are specifically, then like this is what we talk about pretty much every single week on the podcast. But it's made me realize that we can't allow this idea that we need more willpower to stop us from seeing phenomenal results, because there is a better way out there, and there are proven tools that we can grab hold of, and we need to just drop willpower from the toolkit. Like, you're out willpower because you are not a factor here. And then when we stop believing that we are the reason that we haven't succeeded, that our smarts or our willpower or our how good we are as a person has got anything to do with whether we've been successful losing weight, when that as a crutch gets thrown out, then it's time for us to take radical responsibility and get serious about what is the reason that we haven't. And it's always going to come down to these two things. Knowing what to do. This is the knowledge piece. It's the knowing how to get into a calorie deficit. Understanding those fundamental principles that it's not about eating no fat or potatoes are the reason. It's that you need to get into a calorie deficit. And the easiest way to do that is to eat low calorie dense whole carbohydrate plant foods. And then secondly, implementation. Having a system where you can consistently change your ingrained behavior so that you follow through. This is building habits. This is having as much accountability as you possibly can. It's putting an environment externally and internally that allows you to keep making progress. And when we do those things, we cannot help but succeed. So I hope that you found this episode helpful. I would love to know if it's changed any opinions you've had, or maybe you knew all this already and you just loved the sound of my weird New Zealand accent. Either way, I appreciate you being here. And if you like this episode and this podcast, please consider giving me a review. I read every single one, even the negative ones. There's been like one or two. And it really, really helps get this podcast out to more people and really change lives. So you're part of that every time you do it. And you'll notice that I don't have ad breaks or sponsorship on this podcast because I want to keep it 100% valuable for you. And that just helps me so much when you give back by leaving a review and sharing it with someone else who might find this helpful as well. If you want to know how to get started on your weight loss and you want a very easy 5-step framework for how to do that, then check out the link in the description where you can go to my free mini course on how to get started, not only with what to do for weight loss and understanding this completely with tons of helpful visuals, but also how to start implementing it and changing those ingrained habits. It's completely free, and if it is not more valuable than anything you've paid for so far, excluding my program of course, which is flipping flamazing, then I will come and cook your meals myself. So go check that out if you're not in the mini course already, and I will see you next week for another podcast episode. All right, that's it. Bye.